But there's also this point where it's not about the fight. It's about what you're fighting for.
Welcome to Canada Homeschools, the dose of inspiration and encouragement for Canadian homeschoolers. Canada Homeschools features interviews with homeschool group organizers, resource suppliers, and conversations with everyday homeschoolers just like you, all from a Canadian perspective. I'm your host, Rowan Atkinson. I'd like to thank you for joining me. Now let's get started.
In 400 meters. In 100 meters.
You have reached your destination.
So I'm not sure where things cut off. We were having some technical difficulties. So I'm just going to recap that Odila was sharing that her homeschool experience was great, but perhaps was in a bit of a bubble or a very structured framework intellectually in terms of worldview and that sort of thing. And so it was a challenge when she began to question and doubt, to have space for those doubts. And but then you said, Odelia, that your parents did start to be able to connect with you on an adult level and
yes.
help you work through that.
Yes. So I think that would be an interesting part too for a lot of homeschooling families, like because like all throughout your education within the kind of kindergarten to grades to university, because I also did my university degree online, so I was technically at home. So the relationship has always been interesting where my mom is both my parent and my teacher. And in both of those situations, they're more of an authority figure.
Yeah, with ours, I was their mom and their teacher, and we had a family business, so I was also their work boss as well.
Actual boss.
So it's very difficult to have boundaries in those situations.
Yes,
we had
exactly.
To learn. Yep.
Yes, so it's like when the roles you play and the relationship structures overlap, and when there are different things like that, but then it's usually almost always the parent is in an authority figure. It's an authority figure over the child. And so when I was having these doubts or questions, it's kind of difficult because there's also this feeling where it's like, I don't want to ask this question and have them see it as rebellion. But I
right,
honestly
or that
have
you're
this
dishonoring
question.
Them. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And so there was a bit of that. There was a bit of that struggle, there was a bit of that misunderstanding or whatever, and maybe there was a bit of actual like frustration on my part where it's like, what if? But because that kind of came up more when I was kind of coming into my own as a person and as an adult, we were able to have those conversations more calmly, I guess, mm-hmm. instead of like them seeing me as this teenager who's trying to break all the rules and whatever. So
it's amazing how calm I can be now that I'm not really responsible for
exactly.
what my kids are thinking or doing because they're adults, so it's on them
exactly.
now, it's not on me. I can be much more calm, and they're quite surprised at how calm I can be about certain things because
exactly.
I'm not responsible anymore. Yeah.
It is a very interesting transition, though, especially mm-hmm. if we're still living, which in my case, this is true, where I've been living with them ever since. Like, we still have meals together. We talk with each other as we pass by. I do have work outside the house. I do have places I go that my parents or my siblings don't go with me with or to. But it's like that transition does take time to have your... Because for so long, they have been a parent and a teacher. So both of them are roles of responsibility, of guidance, of like it's more it's very serious being a teacher of a child, right? And also being a parent. But then when they're adults, it's like you have to step back. You're still guiding them. You still give them advice. You pray for them. You do stuff with them. You still build a relationship and cultivate that. But it's very different because you're no longer responsible.
And parents are learning that as they go too, especially with the older ones. They're having to figure out, okay, what is my responsibility, but what is my only concern, not responsibility, and how do I let go and back off when it's been my job to hold on so tightly for so long. So they're learning too, right? Mm-hmm. And so everyone's learning all the time.
Yes.
Well, the research shows that homeschoolers are more likely to become entrepreneurs. And it looks like this has been the case with your family. Can you tell me some of the businesses that your homeschool family members have? And then we'll focus on your business. But just be brief about it, because I think we have way more juicy things to talk about than that.
Okay, I'll try to be brief. On my parents' side, because we live on a hobby farm, we sometimes sell our produce, our eggs, things like that.
Yeah, we do too.
Yeah, it's fun. And I think from that was my first business at 9 years old, raising my own chickens and selling the eggs. That was a fun year. I made like $100 grand total after one whole year.
You'd probably make more now because it's more bougie to be buying your rerun eggs.
That is true. Back in the day, it wasn't that bougie. But and then throughout the years, my sister and I, we've made crochet stuff for sale, candles. My sister still makes candles and sometimes like hand creams, things like that. And my mom, this is what I think I was kind of inspired by. My mom sometimes would buy books wholesale and then kind of sell them to homeschooling families at a cheaper price than they get at retail, but you get a little bit of extra. So there's that. And yeah, and then there will be my businesses, which has been many through the years. I think I'll skip over most of the
Let's focus
ones.
On what you do now.
Okay. So what I do now is I have Conquest, is a tiny little reprinting company I started building about 5 years ago when I was 18, 19. That was my gap year project, kind of after university, which I finished at 18. So I took a gap year because I didn't know what to do with myself. So that was a thing. And then I did freelance writing. I'm doing house cleaning now. It's like a tiny little business. I might expand on that a little bit later.
That's a good hourly wage, house cleaning.
It is.
Yeah, I used to have 12 houses that I did.
Yeah, and it really depends on your clients and location and whatever. I'll need to find some like higher paying ones. But it's like I do have that kind of serial entrepreneur streak in me a little bit. So along with Conquest Press, I have, these are like the ongoing ones. I have Conquest Press, a house cleaning thing that started last year, when I realized that a lot of my teaching was online and in front of a screen, just being seated. And I'm like, I want something that gets
physical.
Me moving.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And I don't want to deal with people. Because like, at least not that much. Because with teaching, like I'm talking with students all day. I'm interacting with their written words and things like that. And I wanted something away from all that. And then I remembered 7 years ago at this part-time job I had, a random girl I met, she told me that if you want to work for yourself, a physical job, go for cleaning. And I was like, I didn't think of it then, but then when I was thinking of what I could do, I decided on that. Found my first client within a week. I still have them. I love them. I actually just went to that client this morning. It's like 4 hours for their house. They have a huge Georgian style mansion-ish.
Oh, nice.
So it's like beautiful inside. And so there's that. And I make chainmail jewelry. So it's like a very small, intricate weaving of steel bits, and you make them into bracelets, and you can make earring pendants and necklace pendants and key rings, keychains, things like that. So I do that. I have a couple booths opening up in summer and fall and winter.
You're very energetic. How about we focus on the Conquest Press a little bit, just because our listeners are homeschoolers. They'll be so proud of you for all the side hustles and businesses and things that you have going on, for sure. Your mission of Conquest Press, I saw on your website, it says, "We are dedicated to restoring, publishing, and promoting high-quality Christian material for readers of all ages. Each book published by Conquest Press has been written with the aim to edify and encourage Christians to stand fast in the faith and to live fully for Christ. Our prayer is that the books we offer touch the lives of readers in ways that glorify God and build society." So can you share with us, you shared a little bit about that it was your gap year project, but could you briefly tell us like the history of you starting out on this mission and what made you go in this direction?
Sure. A lot of the books that are currently on Conquest Press were books that I was raised on, like a lot of Isabella Eldon, Aloe, or Lady of England, a bit of Chesterton, things like that. When I was little, my mom was in contact with a publisher of such books. They were in the States, but kind of during my high school years, that publisher closed down. The owners retired. There was no one to pick it up after them. And so it got a lot harder looking for those books, or like finding those books in hardcover, because pretty much all of those books are in the public domain. So you'll find them as PDFs or as text, HTML text online. And so you could technically still read them for free and whatnot. But what I missed was having a physical copy, like an actual hard copy of the books to read. And
as you can see, I like physical books.
Yes. me too. They do take up space, but I think it's worth it. It is worth it, especially, I think this is an opinion that both my family and I kind of hold pretty strongly. It's like, within this kind of world right now, there are so many things already tied to screens that, especially for kids, if you look at the screen so much, it's not only like unhealthy for your eyes and posture and whatever, but it takes you away from a more personal interaction with what you're reading or what you're watching. So when
your brain isn't actually building all the connections itself from what you read. Like if you read a paper book, your brain has to visualize and hear, and it creates its own little things around it, as opposed to just having it fed to you. It's so easy to get lazy, though, I admit it. Like sometimes an audiobook is just the way I roll because I get my dishes done that way. But if I have a paper book, I don't. But at least it's still a book, but it's still better than just only a screen. But I still think that it is easy to get lazy.
It is quite easy. For some reason, I tried audiobooks, but I just never got it.
You might not be an audio person. You're probably more of a visual person.
Probably,
I'm an audio person. Like,
it makes sense with headphones history.
So this is a challenging question for you because it's hard to narrow down favorites. But could you pick three books from your collection from Conquest Press that you can tell us about? Or maybe how homeschoolers will receive benefits from reading that particular book? If not three, start with one and we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I could go for a long time on some of them. But okay, I'll try and keep it brief. There's one that I like. It's by G.K. Chesterton. It's called Man Alive. And to be honest, there are some bits of it I still don't really understand. There's like a few lines there where I'm like, I don't exactly get the context of that, and so I don't understand the whole meaning. But the basic premise of that book is this guy called Innocent Smith. He acts a little bit strange, unconventional, very happy though, and that's why it's called Innocent Smith. And he gets put into this mock court of sorts where different people from society try and judge him and kind of put a quote-unquote trial on him, because they're trying to figure out if this guy is actually insane, if he's a criminal or whatever. So the premise of the book basically presents this question. It gives you an idea that why has the world become a place where joy is under, it's under scrutiny? It's something that doesn't seem to belong. And when someone is actually happy, when someone is actually joyful and being themselves and doing, there are all bit in there where he keeps eloping with his wife, but he puts his wife in different places as different people just so he could replay the whole pursuing his girl story again and again. But it sounds crazy, but it's this concept where
that's what makes him happy.
Exactly.
And hopefully it makes her happy too, otherwise it could be awkward.
She just laughs. She thinks it's hilarious. But it's basically this concept where Chesterton is asking us, what is wrong with the world? Why have we gotten to this point where being happy with what you have, actually being joyful, actually doing things kind of for the sake of it, but also because you're joyful and you could help people through that? He saves the hat of some guy in a weird way, and then that guy doesn't actually thank him because he's so shocked, right? So there are different scenes in there I love, but it raises this question in your mind, which Chesterton actually answers in some of his other books. One of his books is literally called What's Wrong with the World. He kind of outlines a few things there, but so I love that book because it reminds me that, and I think it would also remind other readers that there's so much more to life than just getting through stuff. And it's easy for students to think about that. It's easy for parents to think about that. Okay, if we could get through this unit, if I could get him through this grade, if I could get him through college, if I could whatever. And that is not the goal of life. Or that is, or should not be, how you approach things. Where this innocent Smith, he sees something and he accepts it for what it is. And he's joyful for it. He's thankful for it. Instead of trying to fit it into something or making it socially acceptable or making it make sense or whatever. He's just like, this is what makes me happy. This is a good thing. It's right before God. Even if it seems strange to people, they can't say it's wrong because it's not wrong. But it's just that freedom within that I really like. And that I think
we can't change our circumstances always either, but we can change our attitude, right? And so that's something I've been really working on, just to find joy in all the little things and not, like you said, always waiting until like get through this and then I can have joy, but to have joy like now.
Yes.
And get our focus on to just gratitude and that sort of thing. So I've noticed a theme of battle, both on your book website, but also your personal website. And I will be linking Odelia's websites on the show notes for this episode. First of all, the name of your book business is Conquest Press, which implies battle in a way. And you have scripture on that website, such as Ephesians 6, which is about the wrestling that we do, not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers and rulers of the darkness of this world, etc. And then on your blog, you share excerpts from your speech on becoming a warrior poet. And you say there, warrior poets are lovers of truth and people and defenders of both. They hold to deep convictions, act from careful thought, and are skilled in violence and protection, moved by virtue to risk life and limb in the service of others to protect the innocent. These men and women live for a higher purpose. And that resonates with me. I sometimes like to think of myself as a warrior princess, like a truth and justice warrior princess, but can you unpack this theme of battle that weaves throughout your experience and your writing?
I could talk forever about what it means.
I think we're going to have to do a third Zoom meeting tonight if you're up for it. I'm up for it if you are.
Probably. But one thing that I would say in terms of like talking about things, it's so easy to talk about what we should do. It's far harder to actually do it and to do it well. So I think this is one thing too that kind of drives this entire idea of kind of being in conflict with something, wrestling with something, being standing for something and therefore against something, and then
and not falling for anything.
Yes, like there's so much that goes into life, and it's so easy for us. Like, if you don't stand for anything, you'll fall for anything, kind of thing. Where if you don't have your values and your priorities and also the ability to stand for those principles, because it's like you could hold on to a value, you could hold on to a belief, but then when the pressure actually comes, what do you do? And I find, at least for myself, unless I have this idea of being in a position where I have to steward something, where I need to protect something, or where something is more valuable to me than, say, my own protection or comfort, when it gets to that point, you know, and I would know that that thing actually matters to me. So for the most part, yes, because the tagline of Congress Press is the world is a battleground. And I don't think it's just a battleground. Like, in some sense, it's a beautiful place to explore. It's a beautiful world. It's very fun sometimes and whatever. Like, there are different aspects of it. I wanted to highlight the battling aspect because I do think there are forces for and against truth, for and against beauty, things that perhaps from God's perspective, because he has already won the battle, it isn't so much like fighting and bloody and whatever, but like from our perspective and on our end, we are going through that. And so, at least for myself, I don't want to be caught either wimping out and like sitting out of the arena, like just watching people suffer and then not doing anything about what I care about. Because if you actually do that, you're not actually caring about anything. But I also don't want to be just running headlong into any conflicts I find or whatever. There's this story in Kings, I believe, I forget in which book, where this king, I think his name's Jehoshaphat, he runs into a battle with King Ahab that God did not call him to. And he gets rebuked for that. I think he nearly got killed. But there's this thing where, yes, even if you have the mindset of a warrior, it does not mean you fight in every fight you see. It
That's
doesn't
right.
mean
you don't die on every hill is what I call it, because I had to learn that the hard way. Not everything is your battle to fight, and not,
yes,
you know, and some things you can let go.
Yes. And I think that is where that wisdom and intelligence, mm-hmm, sometimes common sense, sometimes patience, like that is where the thinking part of being a warrior comes in, where it's like, what is actually worth fighting for? Is this the right situation? Is this the right approach? And in terms of the battling, it's sometimes, I mean, it could literally be physical, depending on like what situation you find yourself in. You might need to protect your family from a person who's trying to attack them. But if we're talking about being emotionally strong, being mentally able to wrestle with ideas, and like what we were talking about before, if I wasn't prepared to think through things thoroughly, when I have those doubts, I might fall into depression. I'm into a weird spin-off, new age, whatever. I did slip a little bit up. But that is why these books exist. That is why I write. That is why I my belief to a test through reality, through writing, through my own experience, trying out new words. Like, before I could say something matters to me that much, I will want to test it. And so that is kind of where my thinking sometimes is based on. It's not just like, oh, this battle is so exciting, or like, I just want to keep fighting or whatever. It's great. Like, I love debate, especially like when we're talking about ideas and whatnot. But there's also this point where it's not about the fight. It's about what you're fighting for and what you're fighting against, and also what will happen after the fight. And so the grand fight, or like the grand victory at the end of days, when we actually experience that entire peace and joy in his presence, that's still a hope. So therefore, like all the little battles that we go through, it's like you there's this recovery and there's this conflict resolution part after that battling that is also very important. And I want to build into that a little bit more in my future writings. I don't think I touched enough on that in that speech because I was talking more about like the person you should be instead of like the things you do. But yeah, I think that is why I talk so much about being a warrior or being in a battle of sorts, because I think there are things worth living for and things that are worth dying with, that if you don't stand for them, they will be taken away from you in a million ways, sometimes without you knowing, unless you actually have this mindset of putting them ever before yourself and then being ready when it's being when they're being threatened, or even being proactive, actually sharing that with other people, actually spreading that goodness, that kindness and love and truth and information and things like that to other people, and being willing to withstand that resistance, withstand that rejection, and not be broken down by that and just keep going. And so that's kind of like that mindset.
There's a lot in there. You've written and had published a book called Obstacles, which is a novel about a parkour team on the surface, but then it goes much deeper. I'm thinking we should, because we only have another 3 minutes on this one. Should we do one more? Are you up for it?
Sure.
Thank you so much for listening. You can find helpful links and show notes for this episode at our website, CanadaHomeschools.com. Please share this podcast with your friends and leave a rating and positive review on your podcast provider. This will help others find their dose of inspiration and encouragement. Happy homeschooling, Canada!
Hee hee!